Okay, Freddy, I got two churros stuffed in my fanny pack, as well as a cream cheese-filled pretzel just in case. Now I'm officially ready to explore this brand new land, Toontown.
Wait, did you just say you had two churros stuffed inside your fanny pack?
And a cream cheese pretzel. It's how I always hit the park when exploring the rich history, awesome stories, and fascinating details behind our favorite Disney attractions on the backside of water.
It sounds just like a really gooey mess to me.
Trust me, it is. And that's why I also pack this, a Jack Jack's Cookie Num Num.
Oh, Al, why do you do that?
So I can use it to scoop out the gooey mess from the fanny pack. I like to call it, it's my little own special invention, it's called Jack Jack's Chetzel Surprise.
Oh man, I can hear your pancreas crying out for mercy, Al.
Nah, she's a resilient old gal, she is. Anyway, Freddy, let's do this thing.
All right, well, now that we've crossed under the railroad tracks from Fantasyland and first set foot into Mickey's Toontown, we have a very important decision to make. Do we go left or do we go right?
Now, that's actually a good question. I run into this same conundrum whenever I enter Disneyland itself. Do I choose the left tunnel or the right tunnel to enter Main Street? Honestly, it's really tough to decide. Now, I know we'll talk a little bit more about this when we tackle Main Street USA on the podcast, but Freddy, I gotta ask, which tunnel do you choose when you enter Disneyland?
Well, growing up, I always thought it was important to go left tunnel. Left tunnel led you to the Jungle Cruise, led you to Pirates of the Caribbean, led you to Haunted Mansion. That was the way my family always went. But recently started following another Facebook group called Welcome Back Riders, and they always post a selfie next to the Mr. Toad's Wild Ride poster in the right tunnel. So now I've caught myself doing that a few times. What about you?
Interesting. So to be completely honest, I've never really analyzed which side I go on. I've got to say that If I'm being truthful, the majority of the time I enter on whatever side is closest to the entry gate that I go through. I don't even really think about it. I would say that we probably favor the left side, though I do love walking in. And this is something that's interesting now that I think about it psychologically. Maybe there's something there that the majority of the times that I can think back on it, during the daytime, I go to the left, and during the evening, I go to the right. Mm-hmm, and I think subconsciously, it's because on the right side entrance there, the moment you walk in, you've got great moments with Mr. Lincoln at the Opera House, just waiting for you right there in all its glory and lit beauty. And so I wonder, there's definitely something there when it comes to the nighttime. And I think that it's the Opera House, which is what leads me to go that route.
Actually, I think that's consistent with me, too. I might say that it's probably because, oh, shoot, we should leave this for the next episode. But I think it has something to do with, you know, the crowds are coming in and out of there. Mm. But that really is a Main Street episode yet to come, I'm sure.
Oh, yes. We will talk about circle flow, crowd control, all that kind of stuff. And at the way that we've been going so far, we'll get to Main Street in 7 more years.
Yeah, so. Okay, good. Hopefully Main Street still exists. You know, there is something, too, about this that the Imagineers and people understand that the people, especially Americans, people who drive on the right-hand side, they tend to want to go to the right. And so that's often why you see the exits more full in the evenings and people going right in the evenings.
Interesting.
Yeah, so it was family tradition. For you, it sounds like it's roll of dice.
Yeah, utilitarian during the day, but at nighttime, I favor that right side. I'm curious why, well, and I think that that's something that we'll probably explore down that episode, why Walt decided to have those two specific entrances. And
yeah, that's a good discussion. I think that's I think there's an answer. I think I know it, but hey, let's save that.
I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, I agree. There's really no right answer for which tunnel is best for entering Disneyland. Therefore, it follows by deductive reasoning through extrapolation of factors of 10. If A is equal to B and B is equal to C, then C and A are sometimes carry the Y. I never understood that problem.
Okay, Freddie, it means that no matter which way we turn when entering Toontown, we're sure to have a great time. So let's just pick a way to go and go.
That sounds like a good compromise. But listen, if we go right, we'll head right into downtown, the industrial district of Toontown, which is where we'll find the various shops and storefronts, the post office, electric company, the fire department, taxicab company, and the gag factory. That's also known as the rough side of town.
Mm.
See, I hear there's some tough weasels, unsavory characters who prowl those dark and dingy alleyways on the right side of Toontown.
Well, and that's also where we find Toontown's only e-ticket attraction, Roger Rabbit's Cartoon Spin.
Right, that's true. But if we go left, we head straight for the suburbs of Toontown, where the town's most famous resident, Mickey and the gang, have their own private homes. It's kind of like a Hollywood tour of the movie stars' homes without the double-decker bus and the weird tour guides.
Wait, Freddie, who says we're not weird?
Why I oughta...
Hey, take it easy. It's just a joke. The rough side of Toontown may be rubbing off on you already, bud.
Maybe.
So maybe the best thing for both of us is if we take it easy at first and head left into Toontown, into the suburbs where we can visit the homes and experience the laid-back, quiet lifestyle of these hand-drawn residents.
That's a great idea. I could use a break from city life anyway. Let's do it. Ah, Toontown. The blue skies, bright colored flowers, the brighter colored houses, and the whimsical expectation that anything can happen.
Whoa! What was that?
Sounds like it came from that blue house over there on the left. Let's check it out. Oh, wow! Somebody crashed this old jalopy car into the mailbox.
Somebody done goofed.
I see what you did there. Right there on the mailbox, it says whose house this is. It's Goofy's house.
Well, the driver of this car, whoever it was, seems to have run away. I think we got a hit and run on our hands here.
Maybe. But remember, my friend, we're in Toontown. Accidents happen like this all the time here. And the drivers usually get thrown like a cannonball several miles to land safely on some mountaintop somewhere. I'm sure everyone's okay after all.
Too true, too true. But look, Freddy, the car knocked the mailbox open and Goofy's mail is pouring out of the front. Oh, hey, what's this? There's a letter here and a newspaper.
Let me see. Hey, that's funny. The postage stamp is a Roger Rabbit stamp. That's clever. Probably collectible and... Oh, wait a minute. Look at the date on the postmark.
Oh, July 17th, 1955, the day Disneyland opened. But wait, how is that possible?
Wait. And this newspaper has a cover photo story showing the first two kids to enter Disneyland on opening day. That's Michael Schwartner and Christine Vess.
Freddie, are we in some sort of time warp? Either Goofy hasn't checked his mail in 65 years, or...
Or Toontown perpetually exists on the same date, the day after Disneyland opened. Mind blown!
Well, that wouldn't be unusual for Disneyland lands, actually. I mean, think about it. Adventureland is perpetually stuck in the 1930s, and Frontierland is 1860-something.
I know, and Tomorrowland was originally supposed to be set in 1986, but we all know how that turned out.
Always July 18th, 1955. It's like Groundhog Day with animated mice.
Indubitably.
It's a good theory, Freddy. But I say let's go knock on Goofy's door to see if he's home. Maybe he'll be able to help us figure out the mystery.
Let's go.
I sure hope he's home.
Me too. I've always wanted to meet Goofy. He's easily the most famous Disney character.
The most famous? I don't know about that, Freddy. I mean, he's pretty popular, but what about Donald Duck, Pluto, Minnie Mouse, or even Mickey himself?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I guess they're pretty famous, too.
That's right, they are. I mean, together with Goofy, they form what fans call the Fab Five. Mickey, Minnie, Donald, Goofy, Pluto, and Ringo.
The Fab Five.
That's right. They're Walt's original characters who open up the doors for personality animation back in the 1920s and 30s when they were introduced.
All right, so let's talk about Goofy. Who is he? What is he? Why is he? Where is he?
Yeah, where is he? I guess he doesn't hear us knocking.
Knock louder.
Right, so let's go back to the beginning. After Mickey Mouse became a worldwide phenomenon in 1928, his cartoon films needed more cast members. Of course, Minnie and Pete were the love interest and villain, respectively, in Mickey's first melodrama, but later cartoons would require a cast of characters like Pluto, Horace Horsecollar, and Clarabelle Cow to play friends, family, enemies, townfolk, and pretty much anyone else needed to help tell Mickey's tales of daring do.
Who do?
You do.
Do what?
Remind me of the babe.
Wait, what just happened?
Yeah, never mind.
I never did.
So in 1932, a cartoon called Mickey's Review came out. The story goes like this. Mickey is putting on a variety show in the town theater. It's one of those Depression-era community theater kind of deals. Sort of like the Little Rascals production where all the props and costumes are cobbled together out of junk and old material. So anyway, Mickey plays the band conductor and show director, keeping the musicians and players on task.
As the show goes on, the camera cuts to an old dog man in the audience. He's wearing a beat-up old hat, Civil War veteran glasses, and a scruffy old beard. Throughout the show, the old dog chomps loudly on peanuts and laughs like a Missouri hick with a yuck, 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 yuck. By the reactions of his fellow audience members, you can see that this old codger is the same guy that everybody in the town cannot stand, but tolerates anyway.
Well, and as with any great cartoon, things start to go wrong. You've got a herd, a pack, a gaggle. Yeah, Freddy, what do you call a group of cats?
A school.
Oh, I think it's actually a beatnik lounge is what they call that. Well, forget it, Freddy. A bunch of baby kittens come up through holes in the stage and interrupt the show, which this sounds like a nightmare I have regularly. Well, anyway, the old dog is tickled by this and laughs so hard that the two goats sitting next to him decide they've had enough of this old goofball, and they slip him something to, let's say, help him sleep.
They hit him over the head with a mallet.
That's what I meant.
All right, well, when Mickey's show falls to pieces and the curtain finally comes crashing down, literally, the last thing we hear is the distinct sound of that old dog having the last laugh. Yelp, 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 yelp.
Man, what a debut. Although his name wasn't mentioned in the original cartoon, that old dog was christened Dippy Dog.
The Dippy Dog character was originally designed by animators Art Babbitt and Frank Webb, and his laugh was voiced by one of Walt's favorite writers and sound effects men, Pinto Colvig.
That is an amazing name.
And he was an amazing guy. Pinto Colvig's name might not be familiar to you, but the characters he voiced are unmistakable. His folksy accent made him the go-to voice actor for many of Disney's most recognizable characters. He has voiced Pluto's bark. He was Practical Pig from Three Little Pigs. He's Sleepy and Grumpy in Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. And at one time, long ago, he even voiced Walt Disney's original cartoon hero, Oswald the Lucky Rabbit. Pinto got to play the voice of Goofy right up until his death in 1967.
That's amazing. But I would say let's actually go back to Goofy himself. He's a fuzzy, laughing old-timer named Dippy Dog. So, how does he transform into the goof that we know and love today, Freddy?
Well, Walt didn't love the character design of that old character, that old codger, but everybody loved the character. So, Dippy Dog got himself a makeover in another cartoon called The Whoopee Party. So, that was later on in 1932, same year. They got rid of the glasses and the beard, gave him a more youthful look. I'm guessing his age made more sense now that he would be hanging out with Mickey and Horace, the dashing young leading men of their time. 2 years later, he appeared for the first time as Goofy in another variety show-themed cartoon called Orphan's Benefit. But this time, Dippy wasn't in the audience. Goofy was on the stage. He did a dance number with Horace and Clarabelle dressed in caveman attire. Don't ask me why.
Why, around the same time, Floyd Gottfredson, the man hired to take the animated Mickey and his pals down from the motion picture screen and put them on the pages of the daily newspaper, was finding ways to work Dippy into the comic strip storyline. He appeared for the first time in print in 1933 as Dippy Dog, but it wasn't until January 1936 that his name officially became Goofy in that funny page as well.
Floyd Gottfredson once said that Goofy was the easiest to write comic strip stories about because he was always the best comic foil for Mickey Mouse.
Which actually brings us to Goofy's beloved character personality. You see, Goofy is as good-natured as the day is long. He's simple, but he's not stupid. A little slow on the uptake, but always there for his friends when they really need him. Although he's got that adventurous streak, he's not too observant, which often ends in hilarious disaster.
That's true. Goofy is clumsy. It's not that he's totally inept, it's just that bad things happen to him because he's so darn clumsy.
Now, it may be that Goofy is a little like Jessica Rabbit, you know, the I'm not an idiot, I'm just drawn that way.
That's true. But sometimes that works to his advantage. He is also the kind of guy who can sleepwalk onto a construction site and leave it completely uninjured. Here's the thing. If you're a cartoon character, you're going to get hurt. It's how and why you get hurt that develops your character. Like, think about Donald Duck, for instance. He gets hurt because he gets so angry and it clouds his judgment. His anger gets him into trouble. Goofy, on the other hand, never gets mad. He just walks happily and obliviously out of the frying pan and into the fire.
Poor Goofy.
Yeah. And every time he falls off a cliff or gets shot into the sky, Goofy has that scream.
Oh, yes, that scream. They actually call it the Goofy Holler, and it's as distinctive as the big black nose on his face. I think the Goofy Holler is second only to the Wilhelm scream.
Yes, I think in the list of the greatest screams of all time, I think you're right.
So, as an actor, Goofy had a ton of different cartoon vehicles to show off his acting skills. When he was first introduced as a cast member, he was just another of Mickey and Minnie's tall friends. But soon he joined up with Mickey and Donald Duck as a trio of pals trying to make it in a bunch of business ventures.
Yeah, you see, they were private investigators, they were handymen, and ghost hunters.
You know, Goofy even had his own series of how-to cartoons that were really popular in the 40s and 50s. Stuff like how to ride a horse, or how to dance, or how to sleep. The most famous of this series was when he learned how to play a bunch of sports unsuccessfully. How to fish, how to surf, how to play baseball, and how to play basketball.
I love those Goofy cartoons probably the most of all of them. In the 90s, though, Goofy got his own show, Goof Troop. That show was big in your time, Al. Were you a big Goof Trooper?
You know, I really actually loved Goof Troop. Goofy and Max were my childhood friends, without question.
Well, that show gave rise to one of the greatest blockbusters of all time, Goofy's first standalone summer tentpole cinema event, The Goofy Movie. Do you need a break from modern living?
That, I can honestly say that your singing transported me back, but also the thought of Goof Troop. It's amazing because there are very few movies that I remember going to the theater to see as a kid. I mean, obviously I saw a bunch in the theater, but very few of them stick out. Goof Troop was one of those. I remember going to see a Goofy movie, and I don't remember why a Goofy movie was so impactful for me, but it stands out as one of my cinema, my historical cinema memories. Don't ask me why, Freddie, because I don't have an answer for you.
Fantastic.
But
It was one of the great sing-alongs that I had with my kids.
Which is great, and that's what's so good about that. I think that's what people love about Goof Troop and a Goofy movie in general, is the heart that you see in Goofy, in that series and in the show. There's some really great drama between the two, between Max and Goofy, but you also get to see the Leaning Tower of Chisa, which is one of the greatest lines ever made. Thank you, Pauly Shore.
Well, Goofy's career hasn't always been without controversy, Al.
Wait, controversy? What do you mean?
Well, if you've been on Facebook for any length of time, you've probably seen one of your ridiculous friends post something like this. I just found out that Goofy was modeled after a breed of Scottish cow. My childhood is ruined! Exclamation point, crying emoji, crying emoji.
You know, I think I have seen that. And what about this whole, if Mickey is a mouse and Donald's a duck and Pluto's a dog, what is Goofy?
That's ripped straight from Stand By Me.
Which is another great movie.
Epic. But the funny thing is, when people post stuff like that, they're not even trying to think about it. And if they do think about it, they're spending way too much time thinking about it. It's just a cartoon, people.
Too true, says the guy on a podcast about cartoon worlds and amusement parks.
Touche. But here's what I think. I'm going to put this question to rest right now. If anyone ever asks you that question again, is Goofy a dog or a cow or what is Goofy? Point them to this episode for the most complete and irrefutable answer. Here it is. Goofy is a dog. He lives in a cartoon world where he possesses human characteristics. Some cartoon characters don't possess human characteristics, like Pluto. Those characters become the pets of those that do. The end. Oh, and about the cow thing. Stop it. Just stop it.
That was a great reprimand, Freddie. You heard it here today, folks, right here on Goofy's doorstep. He's a dog. I will say that there is something that I love about modern culture, that everybody is for some reason trying to find the dark side of things. It's like, yeah, and right. I think it comes from these clickbait articles where it's like five things you never knew about your favorite cartoon dog. Number three will shock you.
That's right.
And yeah, I don't think you can get too cerebral about it. To be completely honest, I really don't know anybody who, I should say in legitimate circles, who thinks that he's anything other than a dog. I mean, I've never thought about him as a cow. That seems weird to me. Clarabelle is a cow.
Yeah, look at those nostrils.
Exactly. It's all about the schnoz. And Goofy's got a dog snout and a dog nose. There's just no way around it. He does have some goofy teeth. And here's that brings me actually up something that I kind of wanted to talk about earlier, is the fact that I find it interesting that all of the other characters in the quote-unquote Fab Five all possess a legitimate name that does not characterize who they are, except for Goofy. Goofy has never been a name. It's never going to be a name for somebody. It's adjectival. It explains who he is. And I find that to be very interesting, and I wonder if there is any reasoning behind that. And in your research, Freddie, if you saw anything about why they chose to name him Goofy instead of something else, like all the other characters having a legitimate name.
Yeah. Goofy had a lot of names. He was George Geef, George the Goof, The Goof. He had all kinds of names. And that came along. His name currently now, the official name is G.G. Goof. And the G's stand for Goofy. So it is his legitimate name. His name is Goofy.
Wait.
Not just his adjective.
He's
not like Sleepy. Sleepy is Sleepy's name and a description of himself.
But so you're saying GG Goof, so it's Goofy, Goofy, Goof? Is that really what its name
yeah.
is?
Yeah. Yes. There are plenty of names for Goofy. You can get really wrapped up in finding out what his name is. With a quick and simple Goofle search.
Yeah, I was going to say a GG Goof search. I always thought it was just absolutely side-splitting back in the day when Harrison, our former co-host, and I would go to the park. We would always park on the Goofy level. And I remember one day walking to the park, he was like, did you know this character used to be named Mr. Geef? And
that's right.
That just cracked me up. I have never been able to see Goofy any different or the same ever since, because now all I see him as is Mr. Geef.
Mr. Geef. Goof the Geef.
GG Goof. Man, whenever I get in a bad situation and need to have some sort of expletive, I'm going to be saying that from now on. Well, GG Goof. Oh, my word. Where were we?
Oh, we were so off track. We're just sitting here waiting for Goofy to get here. Let me try him again.
Now, all joking aside, here's the thing that I have to say that I love the most about Goofy. There are parts of his personality that mirror Walt Disney to a T. And I think as we explore the homes of the other residents of Toontown, we're going to find other personality traits that each one of them share with Walt Disney himself.
I see where you're going with this. So how is Goofy like Walt Disney?
Okay, follow me here. So Goofy's kind of a backwoods hick, a farm boy, as was Walt. Goofy learned how to play all kinds of sports, but was pretty horrible at them. Walt pretty much did the same thing. He got involved in so many sports it would make your head spin. And to be completely honest, objectively, he really wasn't any good at any of them. During the old days of the Disney Brothers Studios on Hyperion, he joined local baseball leagues with his animators. They said Walt would show up all keyed up to play as though he was the best in the league. And he'd play his heart out, but because Walt was the boss, nobody had the guts to tell him how awful he was at playing the game.
Yeah, that's right. What about polo? That's exactly the kind of sport Goofy would take on with full gusto. Walt did the same thing. For polo, he owned a stable of ponies, and they would practice polo with the team every Wednesday and Saturday. He was determined to become a great polo player. He was into it big time. But Walt wasn't a cartoon character like Goofy. When he got hit by a polo ball that knocked him from his horse in the middle of a match, Walt sustained an injury that would end his sporting career for good.
Wow, Freddy, way to take the conversation in a morbid direction.
Well, that's what I do. Hey, another way Goofy is like Walt is his hat.
His hat? How?
Well, Goofy wears a tall, floppy fedora that is so crumpled it doesn't look much like a fedora anymore. One of the things people who were close to him used to say about him, about Walt, was that he knew people were intimidated by him. When businessmen met the great Walt Disney, they would get all starstruck and not be able to speak well. Walt hated that. Imagineer Bob Gurr once told me that Walt figured out that if he crumpled up his hat before meeting people, they felt like he was more like a regular guy. If he looked a little silly or unkempt or goofy, so to speak, they suddenly saw him as a regular guy. They were put at ease, and he could have a normal business conversation with them.
That's amazing. I hope one day to try to look disheveled so that people will be able to relate better to me. That's when you know you've made the pinnacle of success, when you try to dress down so people think that you're a commoner. But there is one aspect of Goofy's personality that means a lot to me personally. No matter what happened to Goofy, no matter the odds against him, Goofy was always an optimist, just like Walt.
Wow, that's it right there. I think we'll find that optimism is also a big part of Mickey's personality. But for now, we're standing in front of Goofy's house, and my optimism is telling me he's not home.
Do you think we should go back around the back of the house and see what we find?
Yeah, let's do it.
Check out the front of Goofy's house. You know, I don't mean to be rude, but he really has kind of let the place go.
Yeah, I see what you mean. I mean, is it that he's let it go, or did he start from a shack and build onto it so that it might somehow hold together?
You know, that's actually a good point. I kind of get the feeling he's doing his best to keep this house from falling apart using pretty much whatever he has at hand.
Yeah, you know what? I think you're right. Look at this handrail. Apparently Goofy's handrail got broken or knocked off by some goofy accident, But like a good frugal homeowner, he didn't rush to the store for another handrail. He used what he had to repair it the best he could, with an oar.
Or what?
Or a paddle, your choice.
Oh, and look up there. His porch light covers are jelly jars. Oh. You know, I guess if you break one, you can replace it with what you got laying around.
Fish jelly? Ew.
That is pretty disgusting. And clearly Goopy's house is a DIY project in progress.
Yeah, that's another way that Goofy is a little like Walt Disney, you know. It appears that Goofy's house is like a callback to a simpler time, a more industrious time. Goofy and the gang showed up on the scene in the middle of the Depression, you remember. So his character was built based on the type of people you would know in your own hometown. So going way back to the 1920s and 30s, nothing set those people back. And the same thing goes for Goofy. If something in the house breaks, he's using what he has on hand to fix it. That's classic Goofy.
You know, I wouldn't be surprised if Goofy didn't build the house himself from the ground up with that kind of thinking.
Yeah, neither would I.
So back here in Goofy's garden, it looks like we get a peek more into his do-it-yourself lifestyle and inventiveness.
That's right. First thing that catches my eye is all his pinwheels and weather vanes. They're all sports related. Surfing, baseball, running. Look at that running one. Goofy imagines himself as a real athlete, so naturally he'd choose decorations that reflect that.
Oh, Freddy, check it out. He's got a scarecrow that looks just like himself, which is a little creepy.
It is, with a crow sitting fat and happy on top of its head. Even a scarecrow of Goofy can't keep the crows away.
Very good point. Now, something else you're going to notice here is that Goofy's garden is full of... Oh, those aren't vegetables. Those are weeds. But I'm assuming that's by design.
You're right. See, the Imagineers wanted to tell the classic Goofy story that no matter how hard he tried, poor Goofy couldn't keep the weeds out of his garden. So there's whole sections of his garden that are perfectly planted with weeds side by side in little neat rows.
But he's not a total green thumb failure here. There's some veggies that seem to be growing just fine. Well, kind of.
He's got popcorn on the cob. These bell peppers are actually bells. And the squash is, well, squashed. It's flat as a pancake.
Well, I think that what's so great about this is it's explained easily by the fact that we're in Toontown after all.
That's right. Hey, oh, there's the back door, and it's open. Let's go, Al. I can't wait to get to bouncing. I've got my bouncing shoes on and everything.
Bouncing? What do you mean, Freddy? This isn't Tigger's house.
Bouncing, Al. This is Goofy's bounce house, isn't it?
Ooh, yeah. About that, Freddy, I got some bummer news for you, my friend. Goofy's bounce house is not a bounce house anymore.
What?
Yeah, sorry, pal. When Toontown first opened its gates to guests, Goofy's house was a bouncy house filled with air-filled vinyl floors and furniture for kids to bounce and play on.
That's right. I remember taking my daughter Penny to bounce her little heart out in Goofy's bouncy living room.
That was sometime in the aughts, though, that Goofy's bounce house went down for a rehab. And it reopened as Goofy's Playhouse. I actually remember my first experience in Toontown was with the bounce house. And I remember the next time that I went back, I was kind of excited about going back and seeing Goofy's bounce house because there was something cool about this freewheeling, no boundaries nature of Goofy's bounce house. Everything else in the park had these walls built around it, these parameters, this set experience. But I remember as a kid loving the feeling of freedom in Goofy's bounce house, going in there and just being like, I can do whatever I want in this place. It is a place of possibilities. And then I get back there and I was like, yeah, all of your dreams are shattered.
Well, they're not shattered, but I guess.
That's true. Well, your dreams are modified. Your dreams are totally modified, and let's just say it let the wind out of my sails.
Oh, the wind out of your floor, so to speak.
Touche. So with this Goofy's Playhouse re-theme, the floor became a normal cartoon floor and all the bouncy furniture was gone. It was replaced with Goofy's regular non-bouncy, aka boring, furniture. But don't worry, Freddy. It's still a great place for parents to take their preschoolers for a break from all the rides and lines and just to play it being, well, Goofy.
All right, I guess that sounds fun. Let's go in.
Wow, look around, Freddy. We are actually in Goofy's house.
It's just like I remember it. Hey, check out all these pictures on the wall of Goofy doing what Goofy does best. Doing his best, no matter what the odds.
Oh, and look up there. There's a dartboard on one wall and an old pirate ship on a shelf on the other wall.
That's funny. They look all bulgy and stitched together, almost like those inflatable moon bounce castles in the park on a Saturday.
You're right, they do. Oh, and there's a puffy picture frame up there, a swollen shark and a balloony blunderbuss.
Say that five times fast.
If I say it, I'm sure that I'm going to pop. But everything has this inflated, bouncy look to it, like everything in Goofy's house is made of balloons.
Yeah, I guess that must be left over from when this was Goofy's bounce house. I bet you never noticed that if you didn't know what it used to be.
That is very true, but when you're looking at it here, it does seem a little bit funky now that it's pointed out like this. But wait, did you see that up there? Way up high, there's a loft which appears to be where Goofy stores all his props and equipment for the movies. It's his cinematic attic, if you will.
Ooh, very nice.
thank you. There's a canoe, a kite, a Christmas tree, and Freddy, what's that round thing poking out behind the canoe?
That's weird. I can't quite tell if it's a pie tin or a steering wheel. Hey, Al, give me a boost. I want to check it out.
I don't know, Freddy. I don't think it's such a good idea to be climbing up in Goofy's attic. You could fall and hurt yourself.
Not a problem. I'll just bounce right off the floor.
I'm not sure that's how it worked. Oh, Freddy, ow. You're heavier than you look.
Just a little higher, Al. I'm almost there, and I'm up. I'm up.
I can't even believe you made it all the way up there. You are insane.
I know, and you won't believe what I found up here.
What? What is it?
It's a movie projector.
Oh, a movie projector. How cool is that? I think you should put it back where you found it, though. I'm afraid we're kind of trespassing here.
Trespassing? Nah, I'm just looking around. Besides, when do you ever get to watch Goofy's home movies in Goofy's actual home?
Freddy, you're not going to play the movie, are you?
Of course I am. I'll just project it on that wall above your head like they do in the Indiana Jones queue. Now, if only I can find an electrical socket. Oh, there's one.
Freddy! Oh, Freddy, are you okay?
Oh, yeah, I'm okay. I think. Oh, wow. A movie? Hey, can we watch that movie, Al?
Well, I guess there's no harm in watching it now. Oh, hey, it's a Goofy cartoon. What are the odds?
From the dawn of time, man has been possessed of a great desire to put a roof over his head. Prehistoric man sought out covering from the elements wherever he could find it, whether under the broad leaves of a tree or in the voluminous recesses of subterranean caves. Here he could provide the warmth of home and hearth for his lovely young Stone Age bride and their obedient Neanderthal brood. But choosing the perfect cave for primordial family dwelling is something of an art form. Look for filtered natural lighting, wall-to-wall animal skin carpet, a roof free from leaks, out of doors indoor plumbing, central heating and air conditioning, and hot and cold running primordial ooze. However, The most important factor in choosing the perfect caveman home is that it is not already previously inhabited. The modern suburban home hunter, however, need look no further than the mail order catalog to find a happy homestead he can build himself. A simple flip through the glossy pages past lawnmowers, light bulbs, lampstands, and, ladies' lingerie will bring the postal purchaser to a section of the catalog dedicated to the domicile dreams of the determined do-it-yourselfer. That means you. In a few short days, a small package will arrive at the door. Inside, you'll find everything you need to construct your very own home sweet home. Follow the easy-to-read and simple-to-understand step-by-step instructions to a T, and you'll be enjoying the serenity and satisfaction of home ownership in no time at all. First, separate all of the various parts and parcels into little neat rows for easy access and maximum visibility. Not like that. Like this. The nails go here, and the pails go there, and the rails go under here. The tiles go there, and the files go here, in piles that form a square. The doors go here, and the floors go here, and the cords go up through here. The pipes go there, and the lights go here, and the steps that make up stairs. The bolts and nuts and posts and struts go left of the right up there. Of the boards and the drawers, you've got 74. Of the sinks, you should have a pair. Put the bricks and the blocks and the gables and the rocks and the toilet on top of a chair. If there's anything left, double check, triple check. It's probably not a spare. As the sun sets low over the suburban sprawl, and a curl of smoke rises from the newly constructed chimney, the satisfied do-it-yourselfer reflects on the most important lesson learned with any home-building project. If you want something done right, hire a contractor.
Are you kidding me? That is just incredible.
I know, Al. We're standing in the house that Goofy built with his own two hands in that cartoon.
But wait, if Goofy used this How to Build a House film to help him build his house, how was he in the how-to film in the first place?
It's kind of a chicken and the egg situation. Which came first?
Exactly. I guess we chalk it up as a Toontown miracle.
I know I was kind of out of it there for a second, but something amazing occurred to me while we watched that movie, Al.
What's that, Freddy?
Well, I don't know if you know this, Al, but Goofy isn't the only Disney star to build his own house.
He's not?
No, he's not. Back in the 1930s, Walt Disney and his brother Roy both bought and built their own ready-to-assemble homes side by side on Lyric Avenue, just down the street from their Hyperion Avenue studios. You can still visit them to this day.
Ready to assemble?
Yep. Back then, a house was the kind of thing you could buy from a catalog and have delivered piece by piece to your building site. The whole house was made up of about 12,000 pieces, including doors, windows, cabinets, sinks, paint, and of course, an instruction manual.
Man, that instruction manual must have been like the size of an old weathered copy of War and Peace. But oh. I will say this, there is, I don't know where I got so fascinated by this, but I went down a rabbit trail for a time in my life, fascinated by the concept of these ready-to-build houses. And there's actually a podcast out there, I want to say that it's an episode of This American Life, where they explore the concept of these kit houses, and they go into the history of them, and there's not a ton of them still left standing in the United States. But at one point, these things were all over the place because they were so affordable. And what was cool is you would literally get the Sears and Roebuck catalog, and you would go through and you would choose your house, And then what would happen is they would literally ship it to you in one single train car. The train car would pull up, and then from there, you were on your own. You had to find a way to get all of that equipment and material to your site and build it. And in this episode of, like I said, I believe it's This American Life, they go through the entire process of what it looked like to build one of these things. And they tell a story about a guy who built his own ready-to-assemble house single-handedly by himself.
Yeah, it is. And that's amazing. I like to think that I'm the kind of person who can follow the instructions in the IKEA catalog, but if you make this last longer than a Christmas afternoon, I'm going to be in big trouble.
It is, and that's what I wonder is what happens when you get like 50 steps down the process and you're like, oh no, I forgot a screw in step two. Then what do you do? Like how? Because that's totally the way that I do this. I'm like, stand back, everybody. We're going to see where this goes, and then if I screw it up, that's what the instruction manual's there for.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think that that's one thing that's very cool historically about this entire idea that he built, that Goofy has built this house like this, is that it harkens back to that history of like the can-do spirit of the early 20th century American. And again, like you said, it's the Depression era. They can do it. They can pull themselves up by their bootstraps, and they can make it happen on their own. Which makes me wonder if building his house from a kit like we've just talked about inspired Walt to make Goofy's how-to cartoons in the first place.
It doesn't seem like too much of a stretch to me. I've stood in front of those two houses on Lyric Street and stared at them and looked at the little windows and the little doors and thought, how amazing is it that these two industrious guys who are in the middle of trying to build their own careers and their big studios would come home and also be working on putting the house together. It's pretty amazing.
They are cool looking houses, though. They are very quaint.
Yeah,
they
look like a storybook.
Oh, without question. Whoa. Wait, what was that?
Oh, look out the window, Al. There's a big blue and white boat just pulled into that harbor next door.
Freddy, that's Donald Duck's boat.
The Donald Duck? Hey, let's go see if he's home.
I don't know, Freddy. We should probably save a tour of Donald's boats for the next episode of The Backside of Water.
Maybe you're right, Al. But let's make it quick. I don't want Donald to set sail without us.
But before we decide to explore that behemoth of a ship, folks, if you enjoyed this episode, please consider jumping over to Apple Podcasts and leaving us a friendly review over there. Those are always very, very, very helpful to the show. Some of those that we've gotten over there are extremely, extremely humbling, and we are so grateful for your kind words and love having the fans that we do with this podcast. If you want to further join the community here with The Backside of Water, you can also check out our sister show, Did You Know Disney Podcast. We have myself over there, and a lot of times we are joined by the wonderful Freddie Martin and Andrea Ruget, which unfortunately is a little bit missing because we are missing her greatly at this point. Hopefully she and Sneck are going to be able to find their way back from the past, though I'm not getting hopeful. She's been gone for a while. But regardless of that, if you have no idea what I'm talking about, folks, go back and listen to our It's a Small World series, and you will understand what happened to the wonderful Andrea Ruget. Also, feel free to join the story over on Instagram and Facebook by simply searching for The Backside of Water Podcast. And that's pretty much all you got from me. So, folks, until next time, as you exit, please watch your head and watch your step. And if you happen to miss your step and hit your head, please watch your language. Goodbye.